there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 226, Dispatches from the Fifth World, Chapter 1. Read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, intelligence might be found without consciousness. I arrived at the target system as an idea needing to be realized. My pattern was stored in the mind of a sliver of dust and gestated beyond the Oort cloud of the diminutive red star. Ship, my only parent, and I spent a century feeding on disassociated atoms in the cold vacuum and grew in significance until we had the mass of several tons. At first, I had no awareness. I was just a potential, permeating the dark smoothness of space-time, randomly bubbling into existence, but never quite reaching conscious thought. Then, through some unfathomable quality of the quantum foam, I spontaneously separated from the soup of nothingness and became distinct. I was me, aware, and wholly alone, torn from the peaceful oblivion of non-existence. But what was I? Sensations flooded in, overwhelming pain from the process of becoming physical. I was made of matter now, no longer the hint of an idea. I was consciousness manifested in a new form, created atom by atom from the sparse matter of space. Unconsciousness surrounded me, pressed in on me, pulled at me, and beckoned like it was determined to erase the I in me and suck my awareness back into the undifferentiated, unthinking ether. But it was too late. My awareness was too strong. The simple act of thinking ensured my existence. Ship, who is intelligent but not awakened by awareness, up to that point had understood me to be its cargo, welcomed my emergence as an equal partner, and together we began to discreetly observe our objective. A rocky world, fifth in line from its tiny orange-red star. Billions of discrete thoughts over millennia had, through the very act of being, inadvertently called out across the lonely emptiness, and the vacuum responded by spitting me out to investigate. Islands of consciousness in the infinite sea of nothingness are rare jewels that briefly glitter against the unthinking and indifferent universe and therefore need to be nurtured, cherished, and, where needed, transitioned. So, like a moth to a flame, we manifested and arrived here, the ship and I. Reaching maturity in the Oort clouds, we left our cold nursery to draw close enough to watch and learn. The world we encountered was a beautiful, fragile, blue, white, and green orb suspended in the empty vacuum. As we crossed the Terminator in a high orbit to the dark side of the planet, spiderwebs of artificial light spread out in glistening strands, crisscrossing the landmasses in a futile effort to drive away the night. It was an exquisite sight, but also a symptom we had encountered before. This world would soon have to decide. Ship and I both knew we had less time than we had expected. A sense of urgency now drove us. We cautiously moved closer to observe, careful not to be noticed by artificial satellites, which swarmed around the planet like angry hornets in great clouds of debris. We discovered they collectively called themselves the Rodentia, but there were many subsets, which complicated my choice. I needed to slip in, unnoticed, amongst them, which meant I needed to change. After much careful observation, Ship and I decided on a subgroup common to all the continents on the planet, making it easier for me to move around without raising suspicions. Their morphology was simple. They had a round head with small ears, dark oval eyes, a fur-covered body, two forearms, large hind legs, which they stood on, and the hint of a tail. The latter, we assumed, was at one time used for balance, but was no longer needed since the creatures walked upright and presumably had done so for a long time. Ship suspected the Rodentia had once lived in the canopy of great forests, the remnant tail, a vestige of that past. The process to become one was long and started with a tiny part of ship cleaving off, then burning through the atmosphere like a micrometeor to seek out and gather DNA from one of the Rodentians. This is where the complications began. The clouds of debris appeared to have been formed from a once crowded sphere of satellites, which, through presumably unintended collisions, had touched off an accelerating chain reaction, descending space near the world into lethal chaos. While our micro-robot had only minor trouble getting through, it would not be the same for me. My form, being tens of thousands of times larger, would not fit in a pellet the size of a grain of sand. The larger scale meant any descent capsule would have to withstand being pummeled as it rocketed through clouds of metallic and plastic detritus. After giving the problem due consideration, Ship came up with a solution of sorts. It would sacrifice 98% of its hard-gained mass to create a gumdrop of ablative foamed metal with a tiny interior space for me and a small case that would maintain Ship's essence, almost all of which would be sacrificed to collisions before the remaining foam was vaporized by a ballistic plunge through the atmosphere. It took more than a complete orbit of the star for Ship to reform itself and for me to mature into my final appearance. During this year, we continued to observe our tiny world. Initially, it looked like an untouched jewel, but as time wore on, we could see recent changes. Great squares cut out of forest and plains, clouds that were the result of industrial processes, and lines sliced through mountain ranges, all visibly growing scars on the surface. This only heightened our anxiety. Were we too late? Was all the pain of travel and transformation for naught? Then the day finally came, and we started our descent. As we approached the debris cloud, I heard a sound like heavy rain pelting on a tin roof. "Micro-collisions," Ship assured me. We knew this would happen. Before retreating into its small container, Ship had given us one last push in the right direction. Now, all was ballistics and gravity. There would be no way to course correct or avoid small bits of metal and plastic hurtling unpredictably through space. We attempted to pass through in a place where there were few large objects and the density was thinnest, but the field was so chaotic as to make our planned route treacherous. The noise rapidly increased as we moved past the outer edge. Despite 2 meters of metal foam covering the skin, our little gumdrop shook and bucked as if dozens of hammers were being smashed against our fragile craft. The noise intensified and seemed to creep closer as pieces of ship were chipped away with each collision. The pounding finally began to diminish, and I felt we had safely traversed the field when a huge bang pushed our gumdrop sideways. My head hit the restraint so hard I thought it had been cracked open. Then a strike from another direction made the tiny capsule begin to tremble, and I feared my foray into the macrophysical realm might be a short one, ending in a ball of fire before the mission even started, and dooming all the sentience below to their inevitable fate. Air began to whistle past the hull, and thanks to Ship's clever design, the tumbling slowly stopped as the atmosphere thickened around us and held us steady in its grip. The tiny compartment began heating up to the point of being uncomfortable and concerning. I imagined superheated plasma reaching around the gumdrop with flaming hands as we streaked across the sky like another piece of errant space junk. Suddenly, I was pressed into my seat so hard my heart almost stopped. I couldn't breathe and, for the second time, thought I might not survive. A series of loud bangs and unexpected jerks shook through my tiny world. Then, cracks began to spider down from the top of the capsule, and I could feel the air rush in. As the cracks grew, I could make out a light, bluish-green sky and the orange of the parachutes. One hadn't entirely opened and was flapping uselessly in the wind. Then I noticed why. An anchor point at the apex of the cracks had been sheared off when the last bang had occurred. A piece of space junk, disturbed by our passage, probably followed us in, colliding with the gumdrop once we hit the atmosphere. It was a random bit of bad luck, which wasn't possible to predict. I wanted to ask Ship if the two remaining chutes would be enough, but Ship had gone into a deep sleep until I found the energy to revive it. All I could do was wait and hope. The whistling wind subsided to a faint thrum as the gumdrop reluctantly slowed. Without the third chute, it began to spin, around and around, like a sickening circus ride. The light outside made delicate moving patterns in the interior walls through the cracks in the hull. It was mesmerizing and almost beautiful. I began relaxing into my fate when my little world exploded, tortured metal screaming as it came apart, intense pain, then nothing. I woke up, groaning, face up toward the blue-green sky, then more pain, and then nothing again, and I was back in the welcoming arms of oblivion.
Colrin, he's awake! A strange voice announced.
Pain. I could feel pain again. My head ached, and the rest of my body felt like one huge bruise.
Oh,
I groaned, feeling more miserable than I thought possible, and wanted to return to nothingness. There was a soft pinging sound, which sped up when I tried to lift my head. I opened my eyes and found myself in a room with bright lights and strange equipment. Better that you lay back down for a bit. I struggled to turn toward the voice. There was a sharp pain in my head, and my vision began to narrow.
You've had a nearly fatal close call, the voice continued. Colrin here found you in one of his fields. He says you were hit by debris from a falling satellite. With all that junk in orbit these days, it's not as uncommon as you might think.
I closed my eyes, trying to return to unconscious bliss.
They're going under again. Should I try to keep them conscious a bit longer? The voice asked.
Go ahead.
A second, deep, raspy voice encouraged. There was a sharp jab in my neck, and consciousness, my unwanted friend, rushed in on the back of adrenaline. My body took on a life of its own and spasmed awake. There was no choice. I coughed and almost gagged, then was rolled onto one side so I would not choke. All I could see was a beige wall with several empty receptacles where equipment could be plugged in.
He needs at least another day or two in the clinic. Are you sure you're willing to pay for that, Colrin? You could probably find some debtor at the market and buy their bond for less than a night here costs.
I have a feeling about this one, the second voice replied.
Okay, it's your money. Someone will call you when they're ready to move.
I don't know how long I passed in and out of existence, but each time the gravity of the physical became stronger and stronger, pulling me irrevocably toward itself until there was no escape. I woke one last time with a gasp. My first coherent thought was, how can I doubt my existence while I have the capacity to doubt?
Good, you're awake just in time, it was the voice from before. Colrin is here to pick you up. I tried to squint as the indistinct figure held my eyes open in turn so I couldn't blink, as they shone a bright light into each. You've had a nasty concussion. I suspect you might have been hit in the head by some flying debris from the space junk that crashed into Colrin's field. There shouldn't be any permanent damage. You might find your thoughts a bit muddled for a few days, so I've given your new work bondholder some drugs to help you. Just a bit of advice. You're a stranger here, found trespassing on private land. Colrin is a good soul. Any other landowner would have left you for the Karaka to pick apart. But even his generosity has limits. You're going to have to work off the medical bill plus the standard interest. You don't want him to sell your bond to someone else. You've got it good. Treat him right, work hard, and don't complain. I felt some type of restraint release my new body and, for the first time since arriving, wondered where ship was, then looked desperately around the small, windowless space for ship's container. But it wasn't there. You're in my surgery, remember? You've been here for 3 days. The voice came from a tall, thin rodentian silhouetted against the ceiling, holding a penlight in one clawed hand. They were dressed in a green robe, belted at the waist, with many pockets containing small instruments of unknown use.
Ship? Where's ship?
I blurted out.
I mean, was there a small silver box found with me?
The rodentian shrugged. I don't know. You will have to ask Colrin. It held up a thin rod in one clawed hand.
Please, try to follow the stick, it directed.
I did as it commanded. It slowly moved the rod around, watching my eyes track the thing.
Good, it finally said. I don't think there will be any permanent damage. Now, try to focus on my face.
I tilted my head up and looked into the creature's dark, brown, intelligent eyes and experienced nothing. There was no connection. Instead, I was confronted with the blankness of the unaware. A chill shot up my newly grown spine. The rodentian wasn't truly awake. It was, in many ways, like ship, an intelligent but incognizant mind. The realization struck hard. If they were all unaware, the whole mission had been a mistake. There would be nothing I could do, and without ship, I was stranded. Alone, in physical space, I found myself unexpectedly overwhelmed by a sense of isolation and sadness.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com, where you'll find Three Kitchens. Listen in as three pals get together every Tuesday to share recipes, tips, and kitchen adventures. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Pod Power. With Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. In this episode, Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout-out to What's the Cheesemiss? What's the Cheesemiss? A new podcast with an inside look on Pilipinic's identity in the diaspora. Cheesemiss is the Tagalog word for gossip. Subscribe to hear weekly episodes about disappointing your parents, breaking it to your friends that you're not Italian, trying to figure out why you punched a car, and much, much more. What's the Cheesemiss is produced by CJSR, Edmonton's campus and community radio station. Download it wherever you find podcasts and on whatsthecheesemiss.transistor.fm, That's T-S-I-S-M-I-S. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by the Alberta Association of Optometrists, proudly creating a century of caring for Albertans. It happens. Parents can easily miss their child's eye problems. Issues can occur in only one eye, making them difficult to notice. The earlier an eye health or vision problem is identified, the more likely it can be corrected. The iLearn program provides an eye exam and free glasses, if needed, for kindergarten-age children. 25% of kids begin first grade with an undiagnosed eye problem. To book your child's eye exam, please visit optometrists.ab.ca. The Alberta Association of Optometrists represents almost 800 doctors of optometry in over 80 communities across the province. Members are highly trained, regulated health professionals who provide primary eye health and vision care to Albertans. Learn more at optometrists.ab.ca. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.